listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and unfortunately, my co-host, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox, will not be with us today, but she will be back next week. Now, the good news is that my special guest today is international investigator and best-selling author, as well as longtime personal friend, Logan Clark.
How you doing, Alan?
I am doing great. I'm really glad to have you here. And I know that we don't have a whole lot of time because we have another guest coming on as well. So share with us a little bit about what you're up to right now.
Well, I've been trying to retire for for a couple of years now. I'm not totally retired, but semi.
It's been a lot more than a couple of years.
Yeah, I keep saying, you know, I was in Dubai living and I thought I was retired. But anyway, I've been trying to do that and spend more time on my writing. I have the two books, as you know, I'm Just Passing Through and Last Night an Angel Stopped By, both on Amazon and Barnes Noble. And I've written, because of the detective world that we're in and the just all the tragedy that we see and the pain and the suffering, human trafficking, kidnapping, things that happen, or there's so much tragedy in it that I have a book that I've written with a friend of mine called Tirabar and the Legend of the Teardrop Tree. And a teardrop tree is a tree that I came up with that's a combination between a weeping willow and a banyan tree. And it has tiny teardrops coming down the willows. And on the base of the tree, it says, "Let your sorrow fall on me. I'll cry for you. I'm a teardrop tree." And the purpose of the teardrop tree is to help carry the burden of sorrow of mankind. And there's a wonderful, wonderful book that I got Roger Vizard, who is the animator for Narnia and Polar Express and tons and tons, a Spider-Man 3, a lot of movies. And he's a phenomenal artist. He created the country, the characters and everything for me to come to life. And it's a wonderful story about a grandfather and granddaughter in search of this teardrop tree. And we want to actually have the tree where you can order it. Like a dozen roses, instead of buying a dozen roses for somebody when someone passes away or the family pet passes away, the roses die in a week, you can buy them a teardrop tree. And we put it on Kickstarter.com, which is a site, an investment site, and you can go to Kickstarter.com, you can put in Tirabar, T-E-A-R-A-B-A-R, Tirabar, or you can put in teardrop tree, and it'll bring it up. And you can get a copy of the book, you can get a copy of artwork, everything. But we need to get the people to, it's like crowdfunding.
Right.
And they come in with little bits of money, you know, a lot of people do, and it helps fund it and get it out. And we'll actually be able to make the trees. The book will be published. It's all done. The book's ready to be published. And we'll give them copies of the book, copies of the artwork. We even have a passport.
And now, for those that aren't familiar with Kickstarter, and there are some other sites just like it, have really started doing a really great thing because it allows people to get involved with really great projects. This is one of those. This is a really great project. And again, for those that don't know, this is something that I know that Logan has worked on for 35 years. And it really is, it's an amazing thing, it's an amazing land, and it's really something that falls right into what this show is about. It's things that can really help your family life, it can help people kind of deal with their grief, it can help with a lot of things that all of us have to deal with. I mean, as parents, you know, raising children, or as now people being at that age to where we're now dealing with, you know, the loss of our own parents and things like that. I mean, this is something that I think really is one of those projects that is just, it's been out there, but it's something that really needs to be distributed to the world right now. I think this is the time in which we need it more than any other time.
And kids have a very difficult time dealing with the loss when they're young and growing up. The first loss that children usually deal with is the loss of the family pet. That is the mm-hmm. first time, you know, unless their grandmother dies or something, but usually it's the family pet. And the grieving is phenomenal. They don't want another dog. They don't want another cat. They don't know what to do. It's gone, and it's just not supposed to be gone. And the sadness to them is just horrible. It's just, it's absolutely numbing to them. And the teardrop tree and the drawings and this wonderful story literally help carry them through it. It's tremendous. It really is.
Well, and again, having I'm someone who has read it, who has looked at it, and has been involved in it to a certain degree, I can tell you this is really an incredible project. Now, Logan, before we bring on our guest, can I get you to stick around and co-host with me?
Sure, why not?
All right. Now the topic today is a new book out called The Stress Response. Our guest today is Christy Matta. She has worked in mental health for over 20 years as a clinician, trainer, and administrator, specializing in working with people that have emotional and behavioral problems. She is trained in DBT and has provided training and clinical supervision of DBT programs and their staff, as well as their clinicians. She has presented nationally on the topic of DBT and participated in the clinical supervision of DBT residential programs. She currently lives in the San Fernando Bay Area. And what I'd like to do first, Christy, is welcome you to Answers for the Family and have you tell our audience a little bit about what DBT is.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and to talk to people about the book and about stress. So to answer your question about what DBT is, it's a treatment that probably a lot of people haven't heard of, and it stands for dialectical behavior therapy, which that in itself, the dialectical part of it can sound like a very daunting name. But basically, it's a treatment that grew out of the work of a woman named Marsha Linehan. And she developed her theory while she was working with people who had extreme emotional reactions and who tended to have impulsive behaviors and who did risky types of things. Maybe they would gamble, maybe they would do things like overeat or had addictive behaviors, and often they were people who would self-injure, so they would hurt themselves when they were feeling these intense emotional reactions. And she developed this treatment in her work with them, and over time, the strategies that she developed evolved to focus on helping people identify and change problematic thoughts that were contributing to their emotional distress, helping people to understand their emotional reactions and the difficulties of changing your emotional reactions and your thoughts. And the treatment also teaches really practical strategies to help people deal with crisis, to help people learn how to calm and center themselves, relate to others in a positive way, but in a way that also gets their needs met and reduces the extreme and painful emotions that they often experience in the face of life events. And it's been a really effective treatment. She's done a lot of studies, and people have done a lot of studies on, you know, determining whether this treatment actually has an impact on people's impulsive behaviors and the way they act and their emotional reactions. And it's been getting a lot of positive feedback from these studies. And so it's a good match for stress and working with stress, because often when people are stressed out, that's when their emotional reactions are particularly intense and when people tend to do really impulsive and risky types of things. That's when we tend to overeat, or we tend to drink when we shouldn't, or do other kind of impulsive things that we shouldn't necessarily do or aren't healthy for us.
All right, Christy, now why don't you give us an example that the listeners out there that can relate to, I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, you kind of walk them through. Let's say that you have somebody that is going through a particular issue. Walk them through a little bit in regards to how this particular type of therapy is going to help them.
Sure. Well, I can walk you through an example of somebody who's maybe going through a health crisis.
Sure.
Somebody who maybe has begun the process of getting a diagnosis that something might be wrong. Maybe they've discovered a lump on their throat or discovered something, and they've gone for some initial biopsy or something, and they're getting back information that this is something scary. and this is something that maybe there is a real health problem there, maybe there's a life-threatening health problem there. That process, for anybody who has ever gone through something like that, knows that that can be extremely stressful. There's a lot of uncertainty that goes along with that. There's a lot of going in for testing and for doctor's appointments, and then there's waiting and being stuck in uncertainty, and then you're dealing with the healthcare system and with financial difficulties sometimes in paying for your healthcare. And on top of that, then you're also dealing with just, you know, doctors and other healthcare professionals, and sometimes your experience is really good and sometimes it's not so good, and then there are all relationship and support issues. So there's so many different stressors that can come when somebody's in the midst of this, and they might be dealing with, you know, their feelings of mortality and am I going to make it through this? So it can be an incredibly stressful experience. And this treatment, there are several different ways that you can go about using strategies, DBT strategies, to help you deal with that type of situation. The first is, and what a lot of people find really helpful, are strategies to help you get through a crisis. And a lot of times you just, when you're in that moment and you're so, you know, your things are, feel like they're crumbling around you, you just need ways to get through it. You're not going to necessarily solve the problem or get out of the situation, but you just have to get through it. So there are little things like, a lot of times that's the time when we let go of soothing ourselves or taking care of ourselves. So it's putting those things back into your life, soothing yourself, figuring out ways to take care of yourself. It's finding ways to bring positive moments into your life. So not spending, no one can spend their entire time wrapped up in a crisis. It'll kind of spiral and out of control. So finding ways to kind of give yourself sort of mini breaks from that and distractions from that, and coming up with the types of activities that give you a break from that. It's also...
Okay, well, Christy, tell you what, why don't you walk me through from the standpoint as if I'm that person, okay? So I'm that person. I've just gone into the doctor, and the doctor has said, you now have this particular condition, and my stress level has just shot through the moon. Okay, walk me through it as if I'm the patient.
Okay. Well, I might start by talking with you about how are you managing that? Are there things that you can do that are that help you bring your stress levels down?
Okay. I'm guessing drinking probably isn't a good idea.
No, drinking's not a good idea. I might talk to you about what are things that you find distracting and that take you away from your thoughts and your anxiety about the stress. What are the hobbies that you immerse yourself in? Are there things that you can do? Oftentimes people find doing something for others helps them get out of thoughts. So if you were telling me that you were having thoughts that this is such a horrible thing and life is really bad for you now, if you were telling me you were having those kind of thoughts, I might ask you about what are things that make you feel like you can give to others, because sometimes that can take people out of sort of, we call it self-pity, but sort of that I feel awful and my life is horrible. Sometimes giving to others can be helpful.
Right. Okay. So what I hear you saying is that as you're talking to me, if I was to say to you, no, I think this is so horrible, I'm just going to run away. I don't want to deal with it. I'm just going to run away. You know, what you're going to say is, you know what, maybe what you can do rather than running away is maybe you can help on a particular project or cause that's very important to you. And is that kind of what I hear you saying?
Yes, I might say that, but I also might say, of course you want to run away. And that, in fact, you probably need to run away a little bit, but the way you need to run away effectively, which means you need to find a way to run away and escape for short periods of time, and then you need to come back and deal with this. If you run away altogether, your life is really going to fall apart. You're not going to do things that you need to do. You're not going to follow up on your doctor's appointments. So we need to find ways that you can escape for periods of time and run away and feel that sense of relief, but come back, and we need to find healthy ways. So I might help you kind of figure out what feels like running away that's healthy. Maybe it's a weekend away. Maybe it's doing a hobby that's completely absorbing. I mean, there's all sorts of different things. It would really be tailored specifically to you and what works for you.
Christy, this is Logan. What is different, or what would you signify that's different about DBT than regular, regular counseling, regular group counseling or counseling therapy for terminal patients that they already go through?
Yeah, okay. Well, there are a number of differences, and because we're talking about specific strategies, this probably sounds like some of it is very typical of what you would hear people talking to people about who are going through grief counseling or terminal illness counseling. A couple things that are different about DBT and make it different from other treatments. One is that it has a focus on balancing out strategies and helping people with being accepting of themselves and of their emotional reactions and their behavioral reactions. What we did. Sometimes we do things and we feel very guilty about them, or we don't behave in ways that we like. And so there's a real emphasis on sort of accepting ourselves and sort of where we are in our reactions to things. But that's balanced out with the need to change and that we need to do things differently. So we sort of accept that, yes, I want to escape. Yes, I want to go drink, or I want to do something that completely gets rid of this, whatever it is that's stressing me out. But that acceptance is balanced with change. So that's one of the differences of DBT. Another difference is we've talked about a couple very skills, but there's this large array of skills that are built into DBT that are designed to help you calm and center yourself and to get through a crisis, to deal with emotions, and that for people to really choose from. So those are two of the big differences. It's really kind of how it all comes together that is the overall difference with DBT.
All right. And what would some of the skills be that would be different from, again, the basic therapy? What are some of the key things that separates DBT from some of the other modalities?
Sure. Well, some of the key things we were talking about, we were beginning with sort of crisis strategies, because often when you're highly stressed or when you're in a crisis. So there are certain crisis strategies that have to do with a lot with getting distance from your problems in a healthy way that allows you to kind of regroup and come back to them. There's also strategies, and often these strategies aren't as explicit, but there's strategies to help you begin to accept. A lot of times when they're in the midst of crisis, and you can use the health problem as an example again, we want to deny the reality of the situation that we're in. So it's hard to kind of get your mind around things when your life changes suddenly, and you want to sort of deny its existence, and people do that by avoiding going to the doctor or, saying this couldn't be happening to me or doing other things like that. And so there are specific strategies designed to help people accept sort of the reality of their situation in a positive way. So that's another set of strategies. There are strategies that are focused around helping people with their interpersonal relationships, dealing with, how do you talk to people in a way that's effective, but that's not blowing up at them, but that's also not being too passive. So interpersonal strategies. There are strategies for regulating your emotions sort of over the longer term. How do you keep your emotions from becoming really extreme and from sort of getting out of control? And then there are strategies that are sort of meditative, which have been becoming more mainstream. And in DBT, they really focus on mindfulness strategies, which are really being present in the moment and learning to attend to both external things that are going on around you as well as your internal processes, your internal thoughts and emotions in a way that's very very present and very aware of what's happening both internally and externally.
Right. Now, I mean, what I hear you saying and kind of one of my beliefs is that anything that we do multiple times becomes a strategy. I mean, we have a strategy for everything that we do. We may not know it and we may not want it, but I mean, even depression. I mean, if somebody is depressed over a long period of time, there's a form of strategy that they've done consciously or unconsciously to get to that point. So it sounds like what you're saying is that we're going to try to shift somebody's thought pattern in such a way that we have strategies that are now focusing on things that are going to help us rather than things that are going to hurt us. Does that sound about right?
Yes, that does sound about right. I think that you're right, that often we have strategies, and certain strategies sound in DBT sound like common sense to a lot of people, and they are common sense because a lot of us use some of these strategies without ever thinking about them. For the self-soothe that I mentioned, for example, right, is kind of common sense. But at the same time, there are times, and often when we're in crisis, it's one of those times where we forget to use those strategies, and then things get a lot worse. So some of them are common sense, and some of them are not natural to us. Mindfulness is an example of a strategy that's not always natural to someone, and so learning it and practicing it can really help people to change how they're reacting to stressful events in their lives and really reduce their stress levels.
Well, one of the things that I liked about the book, and I didn't get a chance to finish it yet, but one of the things that I liked as I was reading portions of it was the fact that you've taken some of these skills and you're presenting them for people pretty much from an everyday use type of thing. You know, I've heard a little bit of DBT as it's used in programs like a residential treatment center or something. But what mm-hmm. I liked in the book was it was really saying that these are skills that you can use in your everyday life and as it relates to stress. And I think we all know, I mean, as things are going on in society, there's a lot more stress building up these days. So let's talk a little bit about stress, and starting with just the definition of the word stress, you know, where that comes from, and how these tools can help us.
Sure. Well, stress, the word stress really began to be used during World War I and II, and it was used when people started to look at what the impact and the pressures of the war had on soldiers when they returned from war. And that's a lot of where we got the term post-traumatic stress disorder came from, looking at those wars and their soldiers' experiences and the stress that they experienced there. Since that time, the word has really been expanded to be used in the context of pressures that people experience at work, at school, at home, in their relationships. And today, it really refers to anyone's everyday struggle to adapt to the pressures of life in general. And when I talk about stress in the book, I'm really talking about both external stressors that every person experiences at some point in their life, whether it's uncertainty or negative things happening in your life or unpredictability about certain situations. But I'm also talking about our internal experience, which has to do with our thoughts about events that happen in our lives, as well as our emotional reactions, because it's really kind of all wrapped up together. The things that happen to us and the way we think about the things that happen to us and the way we feel about what's going on in our lives.
Yeah, but now, I mean, can we actually get rid of stress? I mean, I would think that's something that's just going to be a part of our life.
It is. Yeah, stress is definitely a part of our lives, and it's not something that we're going to get rid of, and nor is it really something that we'd necessarily want to get rid of. And although stress can feel really painful when you experience it, it also serves important purposes for us. Stress can really motivate us. If you think about work stress, for example, there comes at a certain level, work stress really can motivate you to prepare for things that you need to prepare for, to plan ahead, you probably experience a little bit of stress every day with your show, and that stress motivates you to make sure that you're prepared for the show. If you didn't feel any stress about it, you wouldn't do what you needed to do in order to be ready. So stress can have some positive effects for us. So we don't want to get rid of it, and we can't.
Right.
Life just is full of uncertainty and things that happen, so we can't. it's more the chronic stress and when stress becomes dysfunctional for us and unhealthy, when it's no longer helping us to do things that are positive, like preparing for something, and instead it's interfering with our ability to function.
Now, I mean, so I'm thinking that, I mean, what we really want to do, I mean, again, we all have stress. Aren't we really just trying to turn it into a positive? You know, because there's other things that you can do. I mean, stress and anxiety, there are things that happen to us, I know, I mean, physically. In other words, our acuity becomes better. You know, when we're dealing at a higher level of anxiety, I mean, anybody that's been in a situation, like a dangerous situation, you know, all of a sudden you're thinking faster, you're seeing better, you're actually moving quicker, or you have those stories of, I mean, where somebody, you know, a car falls on them and they have superhuman strength. I mean, all of these things are happening very quickly. So, I mean, is DBT going to help us channel this into something that's very positive?
Well, yeah, I mean, the acute stress response, you're right, has that effect on us, that adrenaline rush and all the chemicals that are going in our body, right, really can improve our functioning for a brief period of time. What DBT can help us do is, when your stress response, that physiological response, is getting turned on too frequently, so you're always in sort of this state of high arousal, or when it's kind of getting turned on and it doesn't get turned off, so you're either getting triggered really easily, small things are really stressing you out, or when you can't kind of get out of that and it's becoming chronic, and that's where it begins to have more wear and tear on our bodies and it's no longer helpful. Your mind is always racing, you can't slow down, you begin to have problems with sleep, there's a lot of other symptoms, you know, physical symptoms, health problems that can happen with that. And this treatment is really about helping people to mediate or learn strategies so that their stress, that physiological response and their stress response, doesn't get stuck on or doesn't get triggered too often, so that we're not in that sort of chronic and fatigued state of stress.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We will be right back. We are talking about the stress response. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back with Answers for the Family. We are talking with Christy Matta, and the subject is the stress response. That is also the name of her book. So, Christy, we were talking a little bit about stress and anxiety and looking for some of the positives. I mean, for instance, and while we're off the air, Logan mentioned a little bit about danger.
Danger, yeah, the stress. When you're like, it's like when you said, Christy, you said that you can't get rid of stress. It's part of life, like grief is part of life. But stress also can make you respond in very positive ways. If you're, for example, danger, when we're doing a case and something happens that's not planned and it's completely out of the ordinary, it brings a stressful situation on you. But under that stress, your mind operates almost through osmosis, and you react to that stress in a very positive way. In other words, to get rid of the danger or to limit the danger.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. And if you sort of think about where stress came from, and that it's this physiological response that developed throughout evolution, its original really reason for existing was because when we were faced with dangers, and often they were physical dangers, and we had to either flee from them or fight them, sort of that fight or flight response that comes with stress. And so it does serve a very important purpose. And so you wouldn't want to not have it, because then you would not respond in ways that would, you know, can be extremely helpful, can save your life, can, like you said, help you improve a situation that's unexpected, that is dangerous.
I tell my team a lot of time, it's like when you're making a building. I look at stress in different ways as far as the physical. I mean, stress originally came from, you know, stress on structures. That's where originally all the word stress came from. And it's gone into the mental. But when there's stress, when you have stress on a building, that's why they have earthquake-proof buildings now, is the stress on the building will destroy the building, just like your body, just like your brain. So what they do is they'll go into the building and they retrofit it so that the building can withstand more stress and swaying, and there's a point of release for the stress. You kind of, what you're saying, you kind of need to do the same thing with your body, right?
Yes, yeah, that's a really good analogy, I think, is that we need to find ways to not eliminate the stress, because it's not possible, but to work with the stress. And to find ways to release it, as you said, and also to fortify ourselves so that we can better manage it and so it doesn't create so much strain.
Absolutely. And in the same sense, it can be from the standpoint of stage fright. I mean, you have the way in which people react to it. You either use this as a positive and present an incredible performance, or if you freeze up, all of a sudden your body's not performing at all. It's not doing anything. You're forgetting your lines or whatever it is that you're supposed to do at that moment. And certainly, as Logan mentioned, if we're doing something to where there's a danger element, the last thing that you need is to have somebody freeze up on you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And stage fright you can get rid of by opening your mouth. Singing. I mean, yeah. If you're a singer, if you're a talker, whatever, the minute you open your mouth and release voice, release dance, release something, it starts to lighten up that stress.
Yes, I think, just acting. And a lot of times what happens when somebody experiences something like stage fright or fear of, maybe they've had some sort of interaction that has created fear, whether it's at work or whether it's going on stage or whether it's performing in one way or another, what happens a lot of times is people begin to avoid those experiences. They're afraid of them and they avoid them. And like you said, opening your mouth or actually engaging in the experience is one of the best ways to reduce the stress about it. And whether it's singing a song on stage or going in and doing the work that you're afraid of doing or engaging in a relationship that you're afraid of engaging in, it's taking a step and actually entering a situation that can reduce those levels of stress.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you mentioned both emotion and stress together at various points in your book. How are emotions related to the experience of stress?
Well, emotions really is, our emotional experience is really central in many ways to our experience of stress. I think most of us can really relate to that feeling of you feel stressed out and at the same time you feel feelings of, you know, either anger or irritability or fear or anxiety or sadness. So, and often it's stress is accompanied by those really more painful types of emotion. So they're often happening at the same time. And stress and emotion are very closely related, but they're not the same thing. We sort of talk about stress as this physiological reaction, where emotion is sort of a process that happens in our bodies. And stress and emotion have an impact on each other. When we're stressed, it tends to increase the intensity of our emotions. So instead of feeling irritable, we might feel enraged. And then at the same time, when we're emotional, it tends to make us more sensitive to stressful experiences. So when you're emotional, you might be more stressed out by something small or something that when you're calm would not necessarily create stress for you. So they're sort of reciprocal, stress and emotion. And one of the things that can be really helpful is just to begin to understand your own, because we each have some individuality in how we experience stress and how we experience emotion and what triggers stress and emotion for us. So understanding your own process of experiencing stress and the process of emotion and how emotion comes about for you can be really helpful in reducing your stress, because it can create a level of predictability, which predictability is one of the key factors to reducing your physiological stress response and reducing your stress.
Now, another thing I notice you touch on a lot is our thoughts, you know, those inner voices that we have, you know, of what we're telling ourselves at a time in which we're going through a trauma or we're going through a level of high stress. I mean, why are these thoughts so important in getting those under control to help reduce our stress levels?
Well, yeah, thoughts as well as emotions. Thoughts are really key to both emotions and to our stress levels. It's often what we're thinking about what's happening in our life that can be more important to how much stress and how emotional we are than the actual experience itself. Sometimes when we think about things, our thoughts are an accurate reflection of what the world around us. But sometimes when we're thinking about something, it's a distorted thought or an exaggerated thought. If you take the example of, you know, a comment from a supervisor at work that, you know, is maybe somewhat critical, you might think, my boss hates me and I'm going to be fired. Now, if that thought's accurate, then you have good reason to be stressed out, and maybe you need to do certain things to either improve your boss's opinion of you or to find another job. But if that thought is exaggerated or distorted, and you think that kind of thought frequently, you're going to be going through your work life and your day stressed out a lot, and stressed out in some ways needlessly, because you're not about to be fired and your work performance isn't problematic. And so your thoughts are enhancing and increasing the amount of stress that you feel, and increasing then also the emotions that might go with that, the anxiety and fear that would go with, you know, feeling like I might be fired at any moment. So thoughts are really central, and how we're thinking is really central to our experience of stress and the intensity of the stress that we feel. And beginning to learn how to see our thoughts and sometimes change our thoughts, but just be more aware of what we're thinking, can have a really large impact on our awareness of whether we're distorting them and our ability to manage stress and either be stuck sort of in this negative thinking pattern or be able to kind of let it pass by and not affect our stress levels as much.
Now, how would you use DBT to take that example that you just had to shift those thoughts, to get them to something? You know, you have somebody that comes into you and says, here's my problem. You know, I have these feelings and these thoughts all day that I'm on the verge of being fired because I'm not doing well enough and so on. How can you, again, using DBT, shift those in such a way that person, you know, can stay in that job? That, and especially in this day and age, keeping a job's really important. So, you know, what would you do for that particular person to make those changes?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of different strategies, and DBT actually grew out of cognitive behavioral therapy. So it relies on a number of different strategies. So I'll sort of tell you about some of the ones that can kind of get you becoming more aware of your thinking and begin to open you up to using some of these cognitive strategies. And a lot of times, just becoming more observant of your thoughts and becoming more aware of what you're thinking can be very helpful in changing what you're thinking, or in not being engaged in that thought and really believing it. A lot of times when thoughts happen, we are engrossed in them. And we are engrossed in our worries. We're not sort of thinking, oh, I'm worrying about something. We are in our worries. and we are in the emotional experience of our worries, or we are sort of going through our daily routine and we're thinking about things and we're not even really aware of what we're doing, whether we're showering. I think many people have had the experience of driving somewhere, and when you get there, you don't even really remember the drive because you've been so engrossed in what you were thinking. And so you know, they sort of call this automatic pilot. We're running around on automatic pilot, and we're not really aware of what we're thinking or what we're doing. And so one technique is to first begin to become more aware of our thoughts and what we're thinking that's stressing us out. So we might talk to someone about trying to imagine their thoughts as clouds in the sky. And when you have this experience, like your boss criticizes you, to not try to get rid of the thoughts that you're experiencing, but just to acknowledge them, to say, oh, I see now that I'm thinking about that my boss hates me and that I'm going to be fired. And to imagine them as clouds and just notice that thought and let it float into your brain and float out of your brain. And then whatever comes next, you know, now I'm thinking that my life is over and this is a catastrophe and I'm not going to be able to feed my family and I'm going to be a disgrace to my family, or whatever thoughts come in. And you're not trying to change them, but you're just, instead of engaging in them and sort of becoming emotionally reactive to them, just noticing that they're there and sort of viewing them as clouds and allowing them to pass through your mind. Sometimes just learning how to do that, and that takes a lot of practice to do. You know, it's not just an easy thing to just all of a sudden begin switching from being engrossed in thoughts to learning, you know, to being able to observe them and notice them. But sometimes just simply that process is enough for someone to say, boy, you know, those thoughts really aren't accurate. You know, he criticizes everybody, or criticism is part of the work process and it's okay, and it doesn't mean that you're about to be fired. So sometimes just being able to step back from your thoughts is enough to be more objective and to have them become less stressful for you.
All right. You know, we've got an instant message coming in. We've got a little bit of noise in the headphones. Can you hear it? On your end?
I suppose so. I'm not sure. I can't really hear it now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's see if we can get through this.
I guess, yeah, I do have a little bit of a, is it like a buzzing? Not a buzzing, but
like
sort
wind.
Of a,
it's like,
yeah,
wind blowing.
Yeah, like wind,
a wind
blowing.
Noise. Yeah, I do hear it a little bit.
Okay. Well, anyway, we have an instant message that has come through from a listener, and this one reads, my 15-year-old daughter, who we just moved to a private charter school last year, has been showing tremendous signs of stress from the pressures of trying to maintain her schoolwork, quote, fit in, and make new friends. When I saw that her hair was starting to literally fall out and she was feeling nauseous frequently, I took her to both a medical doctor and a psychologist. After 6 months with no resolve, we are considering pulling her out of school and homeschooling her. This is tearing our hearts out. Do you have any advice for us and for our teen?
Wow, that sounds like a really painful and difficult situation that both the parents and their teenager are in. And I think, you know, it sounds like they have already begun looking at both medical reasons. Is there something going on medically, which I think is really important, because sometimes we interpret signs of, you know, medical symptoms as signs of stress. And also going to the psychologist. I mean, I would recommend they might want to try a psychologist with a very specific treatment. Certainly, of course, I like DBT because it focused specifically on this type of problem and on the behaviors and on the levels of intense emotion that somebody has experienced, and it will help the help their daughter begin to pinpoint specifically what is it about school that is stressing her out. And often there are very specific situations and the way that she's experiencing those situations that can be creating these high stress levels. The way that she's thinking about them, she might be having perfectionistic thoughts about them, that if I make a mistake, nobody will like me, or I'll be a failure if I don't do well in school, or those sorts of things, and figuring out what's going on that's creating these intense levels of stress, whether it's internal, whether there are external stressors that they're not aware of that are happening at the school, can be really helpful. So if that's not happening in the therapy that she's in right now, maybe they want to work with that psychologist or find something that would be working for her. And in the short term, I think sounds like they need to make decisions about, you know, is this environment just simply too stressful at the moment for her, and is the stress so acute that it's a really unhealthy environment for her, and should they make changes to that?
Yeah, and I think another thing to add is, again, having read part of the book, again, for this particular listener, you may want to, again, get the book. It's called The Stress Response, and see if there are some things in there that may be able to help you. And let me give the website before we run out of time. It's www.dbtmind.com. That's D as in David, B as in boy, T as in Tom, mind.com. And we have another message that has come in. This one says, I followed the link on the Answers for the Family site to your site, and I am very impressed with your approach to de-stressing. I am a police officer in Los Angeles, and there are no words for how, quote, stressed out all of us are these days. Several of my fellow officers have been discussing the effects of stress on the way we are reacting to the public, not to mention our families. I would like you to talk a little bit about the stress record and distract assessment from your site.
Sure. The stress record and the distract assessment are two tools that you can use in order to help you begin to determine your own individual levels of stress and how this sort of the process of stress and emotion for you, and then also what are some very specific strategies that work for you. And I think one of the things that's important is that every individual has a slightly different response to stressful events and how they happen, and so beginning to learn about your own internal process is really important. And then what strategies work are also different for people. You know, playing golf might work very well for one person to kind of give them a break, and not at all for somebody else. And it might be something completely different that works for something else. So these are two tools that you can use. The stress record is really about beginning to become more aware of when you're stressed out and how and what is triggering those stressful responses for you. And sometimes it's obvious, but sometimes we're not really aware of why at this moment did I start thinking about that stressful experience that happened this morning? Why am I still caught up in it? And so the stress record can begin to help us sort of figure those sort of things out, and it leads you through a series of questions that you would then keep over a period of time and help you begin to understand sort of the thoughts that come along with things and what triggers your stress for you. And then the distract assessment is really about figuring out which sort of very specific strategies can help you during a moment of crisis to sort of escape for brief periods of time.
Well, and this is great. So in other words, you have tools on your website that people can go to. They can get these tools, and this can help them kind of look into some of their own issues. I think that's great. Now, for everybody out there, the book is called The Stress Response. Christy, thank you so much for coming on. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want you to know I appreciate you not only doing the book, but coming on the show and sharing this with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really appreciated the opportunity to talk about it and to speak with you. And I appreciate all the listeners' comments that you also brought. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And again, if you have any other questions, you can not only go to her site, but if you are driving and you couldn't write that down, you can go to our site. It's answers4thefamilyblog.com. We will have Christy's information as well as a variety of other information on there. Logan, Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. Now, this was interesting. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the teardrop tree and such. Obviously, some of the things where stress is involved, I mean, can also be grief.
Absolutely. Grief causes great stress.
Absolutely. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, again, tell us a little bit about a little bit more about how somebody can either learn more about the teardrop tree or even how to go in and make a pledge for it.
You can go to Kickstarter.com, which is a crowdfunding site for great projects. And they can go in there. They can put in Tirabar or the teardrop tree, and it'll pop up. And it's you can get the novel, which is a wonderful 220-page novel with animated drawings by the guy that did Narnia and Polar Express and many other shows. And it's just a wonderful story of a grandfather and his granddaughter searching, going on a journey to this country, Tirabar, and searching for the teardrop tree. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And the teardrop tree, we're hoping to actually have the trees manufactured. We've got them molded, get it done so that they can, instead of sending a dozen roses to cheer someone up, you send them a teardrop tree.
And if you are driving or you are unable to write that down in regards to the information on how to get on Kickstarter, go to the Answers for the Family blog or the Answers for the Family website. We will have that information on there. You can click on it and learn more. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you will be back with us again next week. Take care.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk. Right here on LA Talk Radio.